Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えないよ。
あ、こんなところ。
What's good, Internet? It is July 24th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 82.
Yeah.
Danielle Riendo is here with me. I'm Austin Walker. Danielle's upset about her shoes.
I'm very upset about my shoes. My shoes got soaked.
It's pouring. It's pouring rain.
Pouring rain, and I have
Brooklyn,
a several mile walk now as part of my daily
commute.
Oh, did
you walk here?
Not entirely.
Okay.
Honestly, it would probably be faster if I just walked the 3 miles, but then I'd have to walk another 2 miles at night and then another three back.
Wait, does the distance
change
at night?
My gym is a mile away.
Tell me about how Brooklyn works. Does Brooklyn get longer at night?
Brooklyn gets longer at night. It's a weird scientific fact.
This is some Dark City shit.
Yeah, it is.
I love it.
Dark City is based on
Dark City.
Dark City is so
good.
Rob Zachney here to extol the virtues of Dark City, one of the best films of the last 25 years.
It's all about the tuning.
Yeah. The tuning is here. The tuning is forever.
It's almost 20 years old.
Is it?
I think next year will be its 20
We should
20
do a Dark City rewatch podcast.
I really think we should. I would be so down.
It's a brand new podcast that goes for one episode?
Yeah. Patrick Klepek joining us. Apparently opposed to our new podcast plan where we launch a new podcast for every movie that ever exists.
That we like.
Exactly. How's everybody doing today? It's a little late this Monday, but we're here. We're live.
We're alive.
If you saw Breakfast in Battlegrounds this morning, you know I feel more alive than I've ever felt before. We didn't get that chicken dinner, but it didn't matter because
Pump Action Patrick
debuted on Battlegrounds this morning.
I've never seen a man take so many other people apart with a shotgun. It was like a can opener, and everybody else was tuna. It was unbelievable.
Everybody else was tuna.
I tried to take the aggression I learned from Matt Pasquale over the weekend when I got my chicken dinner with him in a duo match, and have tried to take that aggression, smart aggression, like tactical aggression, like not charging in just to charge in,
not
but like
foolish,
realizing,
not brash.
Well, it's like realizing that sometimes you need to go to people to create opportunities for yourself.
Because they don't want you to. No one wants you to be in their face. And so if you can, like, sneak around on them, if you can, like, give them, just, like, jostle them a little bit, it means something. I know this thing I picked up today by watching you from my position knocked out on the ground, bleeding out while you
just
killed four people.
Just hearing go off in the background.
Yeah, ba-boom, Patrick killed a guy. Ba-boom, Patrick killed a guy. Ba-boom, Patrick dodged a shot. Ba-boom, Patrick killed a guy. Killed four people in like 30 seconds. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
It was incredible. So shout out to Patrick Klepek, who had an amazing day today in Breakfast in Battlegrounds. Quick thing I want to shout out is that we are doing a special theme week this week, a special series called At Play in the Carceral State. That is a collection of – I had to do this for like an internal marketing thing. I was like, what is in this – like what is actually in numbers? What is actually in this thing that we're putting together? And it's 11 new pieces of editorial plus a bunch of stuff from the archives plus a new documentary that are engaging with kind of prison culture, not just stories about games in prisons but also about games and a larger sort of prison culture. When the word carceral kind of gestures not only to like people in prison and prison guards but also – a larger kind of systems and infrastructures and processes and all of the stuff that combines into a state of discipline and a state of making so many things relate back to will I be incarcerated for this? And so the cornerstone of that is five pieces that are coming out this week written by Mira McCammon, who is a freelancer and an academic who we sent to Guantanamo Bay, to the naval base there and the detention center. The first of those came out today. Tomorrow we have a follow-up to our Dungeons & Dragons and D&D piece that ran 8-9 months ago now, in both we have a written follow-up and we have a documentary follow-up. So I'm really excited for people to see that. And we have just other stuff, critical essays and you know, columns all week, little free play articles
about free
games that happen to do with
prisons.
Yeah. In prison culture. I actually think we are going to get something in on interactive fiction in prisons now, too. It's like stuff is still coming together to some degree because it's like we have people who are like, oh, I figured it out finally. Like, yes, yeah. Awesome, good, let's do it. Let's make this really incredible week happen. So check that out, waypoint.vice.com. It's everywhere on our socials right now, on our socials, as people say. So check that out.
Is that a thing people say?
People
check
say
the socials.
It. People say
who
soch. I think Dave Lang says soch now. So says Adam Boys on Twitter. Adam Boys went off on a rant. Adam Boys, formerly head of third party at Sony and now at some big fucking job title at Iron Galaxy, said
trying to control Dave Lang.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Dave Lang's father.
And Dave Lang was basically, yes. And Dave Lang was telling Adam apparently that Adam needs to catch up with his soch game and just, you can't.
Harsh words.
So
hard love from a dad, right
yeah.
there. You know,
no, the other way around. Actually, it was a son telling his dad.
The son's giving the dad
said,
the hard
hey,
love.
Get on these. Get out here. Get on my soch game. That's what he said.
Soching
that's
it
what
up.
Millennials say.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's been kind of a wild couple of days here. A question that I, you know, we've gotten a lot of questions about something, so I'd rather just like answer this up front instead of waiting until we get to the question bucket, which is Vice got hit with a bunch of layoffs last weekend, or not last weekend, last Friday. It was a surprising thing. It was associated with a kind of a larger reorganization effort, both internationally and here in the States. And, you know, a thing that was a bummer is in that process, Mike Diver, who was writing about games for Vice long before any of us were here, unfortunately got let go in the UK. And so you know, we have nothing but the kindest wishes for Mike. I think I've said this before on the podcast and elsewhere that, you know, there would not be a Waypoint without Mike Diver. Mike Diver was writing about games for Vice years ago as a freelancer, made the pitch that, like, hey, this is something that we should get into for serious, you know, became a staff writer, and then eventually even suggested my name as EIC for this position over a year ago. And so, you know, nothing but love for Mike. Shout outs to Mike. If you're in the UK and are looking for a freelancer or a staff writer, let me tell you, Mike Diver, talk to him. You know,
talk
that's
to
what
him.
I'll say. Yeah. I think that's probably my update on that stuff. That stuff's weird. Like, reorgs suck. Like, that's what I think what it comes down to is, like, it's one of those things where there's a Variety story that ran. And it was like, oh, 2% of Vice got laid off. That's a small number. 2% is like a small number out of 100%.
It feels like a small number, but it's like it's a large
number. It's the leftovers literally the leftovers number of, like, if 2% of the population of the world went away, what would it do? And the whole thing is, like, with some people, they don't know anybody. But some people,
like,
their
entire
family, like Nora, her whole family went away.
Spoiler.
So
that's
premise in, like, the
that's like in the first episode.
Yeah, I've seen that first, like, six episodes.
It's the first episode.
But that's the thing, right? It's like it can be
it
very
can really
weird,
matter
especially
if it's you.
From the inside of this space and the inside of media, especially if you add this up with all of the other pivots to video, all of the other, like, editorial teams that have been you know, cut down. And it's I think it's an interesting time in media for sure.
There's a certain numbness that goes along with if you've worked like a lot of us have in this business for as long as some of us have that, like, you almost don't even blink at, like, the term reorg because you've been through that process a billion times and all you can do is just hold on to your seat and hope that you're not part of the reorg.
That is.
There's a lot of survivor's guilt, I think.
Oh, totally.
Kind of goes along with it sometimes. And
I mean, you know, going through this, like, when I was a freelancer, this was always something that they were upsetting moments because, one, they couldn't involve any of your friends. But then also, just selfishly, it was like, well, is my in at an outlet going to get taken out? Like, what's their freelance budget going to be like? It was different. It's different being on the inside of these things because, like, you get an ambiguous email in the morning that you weren't expecting, and you're sort of, like, sitting up and being like, huh, what's today going to be like, and should I be worried?
Right.
And you spend the rest of the day wondering what the hell's going to happen, and then, it's a very strange thing and a very unpleasant one to go through, and it's definitely sort of newish to me because I've been independent contractor so long.
Right, right.
There's an eeriness and a different sort of shittiness to it.
Right. So I had left 1UP a number of years before they went through a lot of their tumultuous times and getting sold to IGN and all this other weird stuff that happened there. But when IGN was going through sort of its, or 1UP was going through kind of like its death throes, and before it like reached its final form over at IGN, there was this sort of like... This happens, I'm sure, all the time in like sort of like organization layoffs, but like there were two email chains. Mm. And so the first email chain that went out, everyone that was CC'd on that had just been told, hey, come to meeting, let's just say for sake of simplicity, meeting room A. And then there was another email chain where a bunch of, and these people were not BCC'd, they were CC'd. So, and the other one was like, hey, everyone, come to meeting room
briefly,
B.
If you're young and like are getting into like an office for the first time, learning when to CC and BCC people is very important. Talk to your manager. It is an important thing to make sure that you're not just putting a bunch of people publicly together when you're sending out a message that is meant to be confidential or is otherwise, you know, let's say sensitive in nature.
Yeah.
Well, what was it? What was, but like, what this instance isn't where like the BCC CC things like made a bunch of things public. It was more that you saw that you were on two different lists and those two different meeting rooms had two different outcomes. One of them, you're all staying. The other meeting room was you're all laid off. And it was just like a very bizarre, because those emails went out at the same time. And then I was getting messages from different people. And I was like, yo, which list are you on?
Yeah, that's brutal.
Shit. Yeah, it's tough. And it is right now, I think, in media. We've talked about this recently. We were doing a Permadeath stream a couple of weeks ago talking about when the MTV editorial staff got laid off because of a pivot to video. That's just like so much of this comes down to where revenue is at for media companies because of advertising rates that reflect, you know, whatever today's argument for the future of media is. Like so much of it is in the hand of Facebook.
It doesn't
and Google.
Reflect the actual eyeballs in a lot of cases, totally. Which is what's completely bananas and bad. Shit about the whole thing.
It's a weird thing. It's a situation where, like, to kind of explain it the way we've been talking about it lately, is that, you know, we know lots of people read stuff. We read stuff. We know what our numbers are. We've all written for other outlets where we've seen those numbers. But what happened is, like, over the course of 20 years, everyone learned that display ads do very little. That, like, the sort of ads that show up on a screen and that say, like, yo, Far Cry 5 is out. Like, all right. Like, very few people convert from that to a sale to Far Cry 5.
Right.
And not only is that true, it's also well known. It's also something that, like, advertisers know, media companies know, public knows, plus ad blocker, right? Plus on top of that, lots of people run ad block, especially people who are, like, go to video game websites, tech sites, et cetera.
Exactly.
And so instead, now there's this, like, there's this moment where, you know, this is me speaking from, you know, some degree of expertise in that, like, I'm in the media field, but not, like, I haven't run the numbers. But my suspicion is the numbers of people who, like, see a Far Cry 5 pre-roll ad and then go buy the game, maybe a little higher gameplay, right? Like, but still not like I'm clicking through right now and buying Far Cry 5.
Right.
And so my suspicion is, like, it's not that there are more people watching video or that there's a higher conversion rate, but right now those numbers aren't as settled. That story hasn't been finished being – hasn't been told finally yet. Facebook and Google both are constantly publishing studies talking about engagement rate, talking about, you know, the degree to which people – the one that Facebook just ran was like, oh, it's a – there's an emotional engagement that's much higher, which doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that someone is going to buy, you know, Neutrogena more from their video ad. But it is a story that keeps things where they are. I'm very curious to see how long this current status quo remains until everything has to shift yet again.
To like, speaking of stories, though, and narratives, like, there's one thing that definitely I sometimes see happening around layoffs, around in any industry, but the, like, I think particularly if you're sort of continuing to work in that industry, there's an effort to sort of explain and justify, like, you try to draw lessons, right? Like,
right.
You know, what, like, okay, like, these other people lost their jobs, but here's why I'm safe and everything. And, like, having been through the cycle a number of times, like, it isn't that clear cut. You know, you can't, if you're a writer today, you can't be sitting back and saying, like, well, you know, if you're just a words person, you know, you're not safe. But if you've got those other skills, they might not be enough to save your job. Like, there's a capriciousness to media, to all employment these right. days that is really tough to live with at times.
Totally. It's a weird market to be in. We're going to keep doing what we do because I think we love it, right? Like, I think something like, you know, at play in the carceral state is something that we can do because we're at Waypoint, because we're at Vice. Like, it is not, oh, we're going to send a reporter to Gitmo to talk about board games and to talk about the fact that they have PS3 games there, right. which you should go read that story because it's wild. Like, that isn't a thing that I could do other places. I wouldn't have the ability. I wouldn't have the confidence placed in me to set that up. Like, I wouldn't have the art assets. I wouldn't have the all that stuff. Whereas here we do, and that's like – and have the will, like the desire to let us go do that. And so we're just going to keep doing that and keep doing our best to make cool shit and also to play Battlegrounds and to be goofy and to run stories about Lock of Flame.
Yes.
Talking about how Dota is like a blunt. Like,
it's like a blunt.
Know.
That's, it'd be good on a blunt.
Flocka.
Esports.
Also, read our articles. How about that? Hey.
What's that pitch?
Our articles are awesome. You should read them. Read them up, baby.
You know, I think it's just a thing that's just like there are – it is interesting to me too because one of the other new things about media in general right now is that the – what you would traditionally think of as a readership. Like you go back to a magazine. It's like, oh, you put out a product. It's the magazine. If you like EGM, you're reading the magazine. And then, like, even in the age of 1UP, Patrick, there was definitely this moment of like, oh, wait, there are going to be people who listen to 1UP Yours or GFW Radio who don't buy EGM or Games for Windows Live, the magazine, or who maybe even go to 1UP. Like, as someone who was just a giant bomb, I know there are lots of people who listen to the podcasts and barely watch any quick looks or go watch video content. And, like, the fragmentation of an audience is such an interesting dilemma for a media group or for a publication, right?
Yeah, you just can't guarantee things like you used to be able to. It used to be that, you know, subscribers were that was a baseline. So it almost didn't matter what you put out, especially in the magazine days where it's like just an issue goes out. What's in the issue doesn't mean that much.
Right.
That impacts like the sales on stands, and that certainly is a factor. But like you always have sort of a baseline that you could work with, which is like there are X number of subscribers and it doesn't matter what we put on that cover, what's in the issue. Like it could be a crappy issue and maybe that impacts subscribers, but you still had a baseline to work with, and that's just not – there are some websites that operate that way. Like I would say there are exceptions like the Kotaku's where,
right.
They are, you know, are built upon like, you should just like be checking the front page of this website
right.
because they're built on 24/7, sort of coverage of video games. Whereas like, you know, we have some people at Waypoint that like do come to our front page. Like it's a lot more driven like per story than it is like people coming to Waypoint and then like clicking around.
Totally. Well, like another thing that I think about a lot, and we have this talk when we talk about headlines, is like I wish sometimes I wish we were a magazine because I think especially the case with me, Rob, like we have a background that is like a little more academic, a little more like long form essayist stuff. Where like we want, I want to put a Breakfast in Battlegrounds. Okay, what's it, or like Battlegrounds? What's a good title? Like the Silence of Death: colon like Battlegrounds and the Auditory Death Play. Like no, we'll not fucking play on Facebook. But if you're in a magazine, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
My quest to turn Austin Walker into a blogger is it runs parallel with my desire to turn everyone into writing the more like normal headlines. Like
it's so appealing to write like a really evocative headline, but it and in a magazine you can do that. You can do a long form feature in a magazine because like they already bought the magazine, dog. Like there's a good photo and it has like some cool words and a colon and some more cool words. They're in. Whereas when it's like, no, they have to not scroll past this on Facebook. It means we have to communicate what
you don't
is
know where people are going
to
pick it up. Like
totally,
because like the homepage is no longer the way that people feed into stuff that you're writing about or even videos or whatever
right.
the media you're working in. You just have to create something that is by necessity like more illustrative of the actual point, which is less interesting and less dramatic and often more boring, but is necessary in the environment where you're relying on people finding your stuff on Dig or Reddit or like
right.
wherever it might show up. You have to try and craft something that gets to the point
yep.
in a much faster fashion. And also under a character count that is extremely restrictive.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, 75 characters
75
at the most.
75 or fewer.
Yeah. Because and that's one of those things. It's like that goes into media is like sometimes because so much gets delivered via Facebook, via Twitter, via social media, but mostly from Facebook, is that Facebook can push a change and it's like, oh shit, like we don't have as many characters as we used to have. Like one of the things that they changed this year or they might be in the process of changing now is that you can't go in and edit a headline anymore, which means that like if you made it a headline, there are situations where like maybe you put forward a headline and then you publish a story, the headline populates on Facebook, and then you realize, oh, it's too long, it cut off. Like, well, too bad now. Like, it's cut off.
It's now it's there. Yep. It just says
get
poop.
Get it right away.
That's all. What am I going to do?
Yeah, exactly. So it's weird.
I think one of the things that bears mentioning as well, not to get all like super navel-gazy media stuff, but we're already halfway there.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, one of my old colleagues at a previous job said that, like, to him it often felt like Google and Facebook, but particularly Facebook, are constantly making these sort of prescriptive recommendations for what your outlet should do, except it's all based on an algorithm they have complete control over. And so they keep being like, well, actually, this type of content is what people want because that's actually what we put in front of people.
Right.
And that's what's going to win now. And this other sort of content is not going to. So you should just stop doing that. And I think that's really especially tough for new outlets starting up because you don't have that readership built up, and it's a hell of a lot harder to get it. Like when
and
I was,
because you might not have the person who knows what those algorithms are.
Yeah,
like who knows what the hottest. Like someone in chat, Fox here, it says the best is when there's a question mark in there. Are these words cool? Cool words, and whether or not they are cool. That headline, you like, are these words cool? Would have done well 2 years ago on Facebook. They've since changed how the algorithms work to de-incentivize people from writing questions in headlines. Like. That's a thing that happened. You only know that if you're following very closely what happened and how that algorithm works. Anyway, Rob, you were saying.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very different from when I was working over at, fairly regularly at Rock, Paper, Shotgun, which was, I think, one of the really successful of the blog model games websites that cropped up in the mid-2000s. That has a really established readership because it was easier to build a readership back then, and they maintained it, and they didn't write to an algorithm for ages. But that's gotten tougher to do if you're coming in late. The other thing that's changed is that RSS was murdered. RSS was interesting because it was a way to like subscribe to an outlet and get invested in their identity and their approach, and that was kind of intentionally like hit with a car and then backed over a few times.
Yep.
And I don't think that's accidental either.
Someone in the chat says SEO is very old, you guys. Like, no, SEO also exists and is a separate set of things what Facebook prioritizes. Like, that's the thing that's tricky about how to put
it's like
your
Google
stuff.
Here, here's Facebook here. You need to cater to both.
Totally.
Or you're dead. But you need to make one does not correspond
they
with the
other.
They
actually don't match up very well at all, which is like a complex thing. And I say all this because at the end of the day, and I think, you know, Patrick has mentioned like trying to get us to write better headlines because at the end of the day, we want the things we write to be in front of people's eyes.
Yes.
The only reason I send someone to Gitmo isn't to like I'm not just curious about it. Like I am, but I'm not like spending a lot of money to go do that so that I can get a personal article for me to read. Like at the end of the day, the hope is, hey, lots of people are going to be interested in reading this stuff, right? Otherwise, it's just not worth anyone's time. And so it's one of those things that, you know, it's a tricky, like, devil to serve. Like, how the fuck
I think it's fair to call it a devil. I think it's more than fair.
Yeah, take that face. Yeah, Zuckerberg. God. Anyway.
The evils of our
media.
World.
Media is a fucking thing. Games are a thing.
Yes.
Also, we could talk about video games.
Let's talk about a good game. Let's talk about a really good game that I played. I think we all played it, maybe?
Not me. Yeah,
no, okay.
To be clear,
all right.
I didn't send someone to Gitmo.
Right.
I didn't,
Deep cover.
Off screen, Tim had been laughing. I'm like, what the fuck is Tim laughing about? I understand.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's
video
what it
games.
Is.
I sent a reporter to cover. I didn't.
Yeah, very deep cover. Very deep cover. Waypoint does not fuck around.
That's not
okay?
There's paperwork. It's not deep cover at all.
A lot of paperwork.
Anyway,
we have to say
what
that.
Video games? Good
I played Pyre.
Pyre's
Super
good.
Giant's new game. Super Giant made Bastion, then they made Transistor, and then they made Pyre, which
Can
is
I
out
be
soon.
Honest?
Yeah,
I didn't really like Pyre, Bastion, or Transistor.
Okay. That's
I
fair.
I bounced really hard off of Bastion. I'm just setting this up so All when right. I say what I say about All Pyre, right. it's clear.
I can see that. About you.
I didn't like Bastion. I thought I'd like Bastion. I really thought I would love Transistor. Like, it's entirely my shit. And, like, I put, like, 90 minutes into it and just, like, I think there was just too much for me.
Minutes.
No, I did
burn!
Not.
Burn! Sorry, that was like a Pyre burn.
It's like a 10-hour game.
It's like 8 hours, 7 hours, maybe.
Okay, well, there's a lot of stories.
I was telling a
level
sick
up
burn.
Here.
You go right ahead.
I like Pyre a bunch. That's where I was going. Sorry, I just that's all I got. Pyre's pretty good. What's Pyre, Danielle?
Pyre is an RPG set in a very colorful universe where there's a Commonwealth and then there's a downside. Downside is where you go if you get, like, pushed out of the Commonwealth.
Right.
Very, very colorful. Neon. There's a lot of
there's a lot of neon.
Beautiful layers.
It's a fantasy setting.
Yes,
there's, like, lots
fantasy.
Of fantasy, like, species. There's humans and demon ladies and there's, like, flying bat people and harpies
imps
and all sorts of stuff.
It's very fanciful.
There's a ghost.
There is a ghost. There's
ghost
a cool
is rad.
Ghost. She's my favorite part
She's
of the
one
game.
She's one of my favorites, too,
yeah,
by
like
far.
A lot. So it's this RPG in this fantasy universe. It's also a sports game. The combat, this is sort of the pitch, like, the combat is basically a basketball-esque or hockey-esque.
Yeah.
It's sort of like ice hockey on the NES, at least it starts that way, where it's like, you got, like, the big guy, the middle guy, and the tiny guy, and they're all different speeds, and they're all different strengths. So there's that, only instead of having, like, just a size factor, there's an aura around you. So let me explain it like
Please
this.
Please do.
There's a goal, like a basket.
Like a basket.
And there are little players,
uh-huh.
and they all have an aura. And when you take possession of the
which
ball...
Which is like an energy field around them.
Yeah, a little energy field around them. When you take possession of the ball, which needs to go in the basket, just like a basketball, you lose your aura, and you are vulnerable
to
other people's auras. So you could slam into somebody, they lose the ball.
And they
you
die.
Disappear
they
for
disappear.
A couple of seconds.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's about, like, maneuvering around them.
Yes.
And unlike most sports games, like, this is part of why it's a tactics game also.
Yeah.
Only one person can move at once. So it's a lot of, like, jumping around from character to character to set up defensive kind of positioning and then, like, trying to get around an enemy team as they try to come in at you when you get the ball. It's an orb. What is it? What's it called?
Yeah, I think it's an orb.
A ritual
Whatever.
Orb.
Yeah.
And then dunking. You do a lot of dunking. A lot of, like, running, throwing
so
your whole body
good.
Into a big pyre, into a big fire.
There's magic that
happens. There's magic. There's also special abilities. There's a bunch of stuff. I really like this game. I think that, like, it's a weird fantasy sport RPG. Not a fantasy sports RPG, which would be an RPG in which you manage a fantasy sports team. But it's actually a fantasy sport, and it's really cool. The characters are all really likable, are all really interesting.
Who's
at the
your
very
favorite?
Least. I don't want to say.
All right.
Because it's a spoiler.
Oh, okay. I understand.
So, are you guys playing this? Rob and Patrick? Have you been playing Pyre? What do you think?
I really dig it. I didn't know what to make of it at first. And I think playing the campaign, certainly, my initial reaction was a little bit like, it could be a little more of the game and a little less of
the visual novel.
You know, characters wandering limbo. Yeah. It's the most adorable Tom Stoppard play you've ever read. The other thing is that it does a really good job of balancing that tactics, that fantasy tactics, like, dynamic with arcade sports game feel, which is a tough balance to strike. Like, that's not an easy thing to pull off. Like, there have been a lot of remakes of, like, classic arcade-style sports games, and a lot of them have gone badly. Pyre actually does feel sort of responsive and light in a way that a lot of these games strive for but don't succeed at evoking. So having those two things in play is really, really cool. Plus, the way your roster, you can only field three characters. And some of the characters
have
some...
But you get a cast of, like,
there's a whole bunch.
Nine, basically. Eight or nine.
And they have really different abilities. There's one that can basically do an entire big AoE takeout effect, which is really, really cool, but very, very limited. So how do you make the best use of that? A lot of characters can sort of, in addition to that aura they project, they can also sort of shoot it. You can sort of, like, aim and shoot and hit someone with your aura and take them out. Who you bring to each match and how that aligns with the other team profoundly affects how you're going to have to play that game.
Yeah.
And that's another really cool thing. Like, my first reaction was like, this is cute. How's this going to be a full game?
Yep, me too.
And now I'm like, oh, shit, this is great.
I got to the end of the first act, and by then you have a really full cast of like, a really big roster where there are times because the narrative shakes out a certain way, a character will be like, oh, don't put me in this one, boss. Like, hey, yeah. Reader. Those are the fictional
I've got some weird beef with what's going on with the other team.
I can't,
you know?
And so suddenly you're like, shit, I guess I got to put the moon-touched lady in, who's actually my favorite person in the roster.
She's really great.
I really like her a lot. I like playing as her a lot, too. So I hate it whenever she can't play. It's like, ugh. The story is really cool. Like, I think that the setup is as you mentioned, like, you're a bunch of exiles out in this place that's called the Downside, which is just kind of like the wastes of outside of this big central place called the Commonwealth, which presumably is a
which
big
is
city or something.
It's yeah.
Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Fallout 4, got it. And you, it's just like all the characters are really great. The world is really interesting. You play as a reader, one person who's allowed or who's not allowed to read, who's exiled because you were reading bad, and you know how to read the ancient rites. And it just like it reminds me a little bit of Brutal Legend in the style of fantasy that it is. It's like that sort of like rock opera fantasy that like, you know, 70s. You know,
album cover kind of thing going on. Fantasy
is happening. Also, the music is incredible, which I will say, even as someone who doesn't always love Supergiant's games, their music has always been incredible. Their art has always been incredible. So I'm really glad that I'm clicking with this. The end of the first act is incredible, and I'm excited for people to get to it. Like 3 or 4 hours in, you'll know it when you hit it.
I thought I was there because I played a couple of hours, but I think I'm, as
you'll
usual,
know.
Taking
like,
my
oh,
time.
Shit, there's this whole, okay, cool.
Nice.
So keep
excited
playing,
for
is
that.
All I'll say for that. I need to find time to keep playing that game.
We need to say play some multiplayer, too.
We can't.
Oh, my God.
It is only local.
Well,
are
we
you
can
kidding,
still
man?
Do that.
I'm not kidding.
We can do that.
I thought that was maybe going to come in with the full release.
I don't think so, unfortunately.
I think they said something along the lines of they weren't confident that they could get the netcode to a place where it wouldn't be a disaster. And it's like, I respect, they have, what, 12 people working there?
It's also something that's a small studio. Why invest in your game taking off as a multiplayer game until it's proven that it would? And so it's something that they could say, look, wow, we're so shocked at how people are responding to it. We're going to put together a team that adds online multiplayer, and it lines up with a Game of the Year edition of the game or something.
I want to play the local and just see how it is. We should do that sometime this week, maybe. Because I really like the basic mechanics a lot.
It's really fun.
And I think there could be something really cool with counterpicking and stuff like that. All of what goes into any good, like, not just MOBAs, but like in competitive games where it's like there's the action,
team-based stuff.
Where can I execute with the characters I have? But also that second layer of like which characters am I choosing? Where are their strengths and weaknesses? How do I counterpick? How do I address being counterpicked so that when I have the wrong character out, how do I mitigate whatever weaknesses they have compared to the other team? Stuff like that. So Pyre is really fucking good.
That's
I really like it
awesome.
A lot. I can't speak to how it ends, but I'm like 5 hours in, so I'm gonna try to keep playing.
Keep that Pyre burning. Yeah.
I mentioned that Pyre has a kind of a visual novel presentation. Also, a brief thing on Pyre before we move
on.
Yes. One of the coolest things it does is it has annotations. Second thing it does. It's really
good, yeah.
It's really, so like, you just mouse over certain words, and it's like, oh yeah, this is the name of the fallen emperor who is key to this religion. Like, by the way, remember, we haven't mentioned this name in a while, but this is the great old one that is worshipped by these weird witch hags. Like, oh, okay, cool, thanks. So that's one. Two, I really like that you can be gender, you can choose your pronouns, you can also be gender neutral, you can use they, them pronouns, which is dope.
Very cool.
Three, it's a visual novel. It has visual novel elements. Patrick, you've been playing a visual novel.
I've played 45 minutes of a visual novel called...
Okay, that's...
Let's get the name right. Dream Daddy, a Dad Dating Simulator.
Yes.
Is that what it is? Because what you said to me earlier was, Daddy's dream is to be a dream daddy.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you said to me.
I did. That's still true. That doesn't mean just because it isn't the name of the game that people are interested, that's not still the dream of the dream daddy is to become...
Who is you? Are you the dream daddy?
Are you?
I think you're aspiring to be the dream dad.
No, I meant you. I meant
you, Patrick.
You.
I think I'm a pretty good dad. I think people would dream about me being their dad.
See?
But I don't know about daddy, because then I feel like you guys, then that gets into a weird place.
I'm not sure what this game is about anymore. I thought I knew, but now I don't.
Talk to us about Dream Daddy.
Dream Daddy.
Natalie's dying, by the way, just so
It opens by what?
Nothing.
Don't judge this daddy.
I'm not judging you or any other daddy.
Don't judge this daddy's dream choices.
Okay. Fair. Don't daddy shame.
Yeah, don't daddy dream shame. All daddies have dreams. They just, you know, they happen in different ways. This game opens by with this a mode or a little option where you build a dad. You build your dad. And so I built a dad. I built him in my image, exact one-to-one replica of me as a daddy. You can go on
very close. Yeah.
Yeah, you go on Twitter. You can see.
You.
I made him.
This is you around 1UP era, though, actually.
Yeah.
This is definitely.
The hair's pretty big.
Big hair Patrick, yeah. Daddy.
Yeah, that is more like if high school Patrick became a daddy, which that's a problem in and of itself.
I'm not judging again.
Wait, is that still how you see yourself? Is that, are you, like, you're like creating yourself in this game? You're like, right. Yeah, still
like,
got
you know
it.
Like, how Bruce Wayne in his head calls himself Batman? Is this what you call you? Is this what you think of when you think of yourself?
Yeah, I think when I'm going around the neighborhood pushing Jessica to try and take a nap, and I'm walking my dog, and I got my coffee in one hand, I'm trying to juggle all this stuff, trying to make it work as a daddy. I feel like this is what people look at me, and this is what they see. This is what they see.
Yeah.
All right. You were like, this game is really funny.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's exceptional. Like so I guess it's made by the folks behind the Game Grumps YouTube
That's
channel.
Understanding in some, or they're involved in some way. I actually don't.
They're
know
involved somehow. Like they didn't do the drawings. Like I don't know too much about like the. I know it's associated in some level with the Game Grumps YouTube channel, which is exceptionally popular. They do a lot of like Let's Plays and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a goofy concept. And like I saw some screenshots going around of this like build. You know the build that dad. Character creator mode, and then the corner when you're confirming your dad creation, it says "looking good, daddy." I was like, okay, like this game seems to have a certain tone that is seems like it could be really funny and not make me feel profoundly uncomfortable, or maybe this daddy wants to feel uncomfortable. This daddy doesn't know, and so
he's figuring it out.
Yeah, dads may look like they got it together, but sometimes they're still figuring it out too. All right, so
true. Good insight.
Yeah, it's fair. So the game opens with like you meet your I presume it's the same girl each time. I don't know.
Amanda?
I guess Amanda.
Amanda.
And the game gives you some interesting choices over like figuring out like, what the backstory to your character is. Like, so it sets up some questions for you to answer. Like one of which is mild spoiler for the first 30 seconds, like you are a single dad and you lost the other parent. But then when you and your daughter are going, who's a senior in high school, are going through some photos, and then that prompts the game to sort of like ask some questions about the past, and then you can establish like sort of like what your backstory is. Like one of those is like, you know, are you a dad that there, was it a two dad family? Like, was it, and things like that. So like, let's you sort of set up some backstory for your character that, I don't think has influence over sort of the, like, I'm not sure of like the, like sexual fluidity of the game yet, because I went to a bar and I was talking to another. I don't know if he's a daddy.
Wait, with your kid?
No, my kid.
This is not my dream of a dad.
I was like, you're about to be a bad daddy. Like, don't bring.
Senior high school.
The Child Protective Services.
Senior
expansion.
In high school is not. You're not bar ready.
My kid kicked me out of the house because they wanted to have a sleepover.
Oh, true.
Two of their girlfriends, and they were like, "Dad, you're cool, but you're not that cool. And I was like, that's fair. Like, that's true now.
And you were like, I'm going to go to the bar. Did you pick to go to the bar, or is there, like, there are multiple options?
I think there are, like, different options that can play out depending on what you want to do. And so, like, I chose, like, your character is sort of like a bumbling, like, he's very funny and means well, but is kind of bumbling in, like, a really fun sort of way. And so he's like, oh, I'm going to go to the bar to watch the game. And then the game refers to what's happening on TV as the game, and like never gets specific about, it's like, I'm at the game watching the team that I prefer hopefully beat the team that I less prefer, and like that's like a bad encapsulation of sort of like the tone of the writing, but right. There's like actually this really funny moment where you have an exchange with your daughter where she's like like something about like whether it's like okay to make fun of sports now. She's like, actually, it's like we're past the Rubicon.
Like post-ironic.
It's no longer fun to like be ironic about liking the sports ball. And like, there's like really good commentary on sort of like internet culture and just like society. Like, it's just a it's really, really goddamn funny. And it's like separate from any of like the like romance and visual novel aspects of it. Like, I haven't gotten far enough to see like
you don't have a favorite daddy yet.
Plays out. Well, I've met a bunch of different daddies. I've met like I've met another dad who's a father of three. He's a runner. I run.
He's got, listen, between father of three and runner, that boy's got stamina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta have it.
Yep.
And. So, like, there's a moment in the bar where you get approached by a woman, and I dismissed her. She was extremely intoxicated. She was coming on a little too hard. I didn't have any interest in going down that route. But then I started talking to this other guy who was at the bar. And we, like, you know, he kind of pressured me into some shots. But, like, we're going along with it because we're a cool dad. And, like, we go out to the bar all the time, and we're used to social situations. And then he's like, he finds out that we live near each other, and we walk home, and then the game's like, do you want to go inside? And I was like, oh, yeah, for like a nightcap. And then we'll go inside. I'm like, no, like,
different,
these people
kind of
are ready
nightcap
to bang. And like, I was blindsided. I was blindsided by the bang. It was a flashbang. Like, it was a flashbang. I was not ready for this. And so, like, and the game pauses because it's aware that, like, you may probably have been blindsided by this turn that the game has taken, and it goes like, yo,
Patrick,
do you
have to play Battlegrounds. There are flashbangs in Battlegrounds. I can't just
What? What?
It's a good term.
Right?
It's a good term.
Like,
surprise!
You think, yeah.
It's a flashbang!
It's a flashbang. And so the game pauses and says, like, hey, like, are you uncomfortable with what's happening right now, or do you, like, you know, do you want to see this through?
Yeah.
And I said, I am deeply uncomfortable with what's happening right now. Not because of these two daddy. I don't know if he's a daddy or not. I don't know him enough to know his parental status.
But maybe that's the reason why you were like, whoa. I don't even know if this guy's a dad or not.
Wait, what happened to that nice runner?
He moved on.
This daddy needed some space, and so mid make out, I was like, I gotta go home. I gotta go. I just wasn't ready for this. Like,
good.
I need more time. Also, I gotta evaluate my other daddy options. Like, this is like 20 minutes into the game. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to commit yet.
You don't want to jump in with both feet.
Whitaker in chat says, Patrick, pump action flashbang daddy Klepek.
Oh, the pump action Patrick sounds very different in this context.
Uh-huh. It sure does.
Good job.
So,
God damn.
That's not even here.
I know.
Pump action flashbang prepared for aggressive entry.
Okay. Danica's gonna be so mad at us.
We did this without her.
That's Dream Daddy. I was laughing. I have not laughed harder at a game probably so far this year.
And, like,
I've only played 45 minutes.
Because this is like when this game was announced, I was like, okay, Game Grumps. I don't know. I know mixed things about Game Grumps. I just don't have the experience to know one way or the other. I've just seen what people have said. Okay, is this going to be a situation where the joke is queer dudes? Like, gay dads, haha. So
no,
it's good to hear that actually.
I can't speak to the whole game and like how those things play out, but it is not like poke fun at like LGBTQ relationships. Like, it is having fun in the way that it is it should be having fun with its like its premise and the situations. It's like, for example, there's a sequence where I went to the park and I met a much bigger daddy, still a good looking daddy, but you know, there's daddies of all types.
Yeah, muscle daddy or more of a bear daddy?
Like a, yeah,
or
maybe
like,
a bear daddy.
No, more of a bear daddy.
Bear daddy, I got you.
And so he's there with his dog.
He's big.
Yeah.
Yeah, there with his daughter and his dog, and they're at the park, and then there's this moment where he introduces his daughter, and he says, he starts kind of like bragging about like what his daughter's been up to. She's like 10 years old, like she's reading some philosophy book or something like that, like something very advanced. And then you have this, your character, or my character, Patrick, has an inner monologue which goes like, oh, this is that moment. It's like, I don't know what the term was, like, it's a brag off. And then it transitions, it transitions to a Game Boy original Pokemon aesthetic, and then your daughter and the other father's daughter are then represented as Pokemon that have been thrown out into the battle, and you have a full-on Pokemon JRPG battle system in which you go into like your items and powers, which are different accomplishments your kid has made over the years that you then deploy to reduce like the HP count of the other father in your quest to like have the better brag about your kid.
Did you win?
No, I lost by 5 hit points. I misplayed a couple of hands.
Okay, now, did that help or hurt you with Bear Daddy?
That's a good question. Oh, maybe you want to throw that.
I don't know. So it's unclear to me, like, if all the daddies you're meeting are, like, necessarily, like, sexual relationship routes, or if, like, there's going to be, like, a spectrum of, like, friendships and like, I don't know, like, what the game's... like the end game is for like all of the setups quite yet, because this one didn't get any like because you were with the kids, it didn't get like anywhere near like innuendo or promiscuity or anything like that. It was just like really it was incredibly fun, and I messed up. The reason I ended up losing the kid off was because I tried to be the like really proactive dad, and I saw that my kid had like kind of a look like a like an owie, I think is what a dad would say. But the problem is this kid is 18, 17, senior in high school. So I got out a Band-Aid and went to go put it on my kid. And everyone said, no,
Shut it down.
Do this. So I actually, I lost HP for that dad move. And
Carl,
that's what put me in
won.
The hole.
Oh,
helicopter dad is no one's dream.
Yes,
no,
exactly. Like, everyone needs space. You know, everyone needs. You're adults. We're all out here trying to live our lives.
Oh my god!
Don't need your Band-Aids, Dad.
That's more of a mom move.
Even then, no one wants the like.
I mean, me mom.
Yeah,
like,
but
like power mom kind of move.
Okay.
I understand.
Just don't the helicopter. Whatever isn't a good look.
Helicopter's no good. Yeah.
I'm curious, like in terms of the way your character is framed, like at the start of the story. It's just kind of experiential, like, hey, like, you know, here you are just being a dad doing dad things. Is there a need or a lack in your character's life, like a need for friendship, like being a better dad? Like, what's the motivating?
The setup is that you're part of the reason you're moving is because you're sort of like downsizing the house because your kid's about to go off to college. And so there's like an early setup of sort of like you're going to have to find other things to like fill your life with because I'm going to be gone. Like, it doesn't make it sound like. That the father has like not done anything because like when the either father or mother was lost, like I don't know if they've explained exactly what happened, but she died, she's not in the picture anymore. I think it's set up in more of a playful way of like, dad, like you gotta find shit to do, like I'm gonna be gone.
You can't just be a house dad anymore.
Oh,
yeah, so it's a lot of like going to different places in this town, Maple Bay, which is a good name for a town.
That's
I like
a good
that.
Name. Yeah, I think Maple Bay. God damn.
Any day.
You want to move to Maple Bay?
Let's go. I don't need to deal with the subway anymore. Let's go to Maple Bay.
Yeah.
Let's move.
Briefly, I did want to mention one thing which is interesting. You kind of talked about like you're not sure what the end games are, and I don't want to go too deep into the kind of larger discourse because I don't know enough quite yet, but... something really interesting is happening inside of the Dream Daddy community right now, which is there is a split in the fandom over some content that was kind of found. So it was kind of like people were like digging through game
deleted stuff?
It's not clear. It's not clear if it's in there. It's not clear if it's a thing that's theoretically going to be completed in a future patch? Is it going to be like a special holiday event? Is it like – people don't know. Or at least I don't know at this point. Maybe someone has since figured this out since I first read about it on Saturday. It might be DLC that was scrapped. It's hard to tell. Or it might be in there and the conditions are just really hard for the events to fire, right? It's a bad end, which is a very common trope inside of dating sims, inside of visual novels, in which it's not just a bad end. Like, bad ends are in a lot of visual novels, period. It's like, oh, you fucked up. Like, you – if it's a classic, like, Tokimeki Memorial kind of just traditional dating sim, might be just like, oh, you didn't spend enough time with any of the possible suitors. You're going to live the rest of your life alone now, right? Like,
or,
bad
like,
end.
If people are familiar with, like, VLR and 999, yes. Like, those games have an exceptional number of endings, and a lot of the time you're ticking off trying to find different ways to get your characters killed because that's, like – part of that game is like the fun is discovering all of the bad right. ends along the way.
There are also inside of dating sims, there is also a sort of bad end that is like aggressively bad. The one that I think a lot of people are familiar with is from why am I forgetting the name of the pigeon dating sim? Why am I?
Hotful.
Yeah. Oh. Thank you.
Hotful boyfriend.
Hotful boyfriend. It has like an evil bird who is clearly evil, who's like a mad scientist doctor who like does experiments on you,
and you.
It's fantastic. And like that is kind of a send up to this style of bad end inside of dating sims. And so there's one of them here, and there was this moment when that's really interesting for me and complex, because on one hand, you have people who are coming to Dream Daddy who've played a lot of these games, who are like, oh wow, this is a really big opportunity for the genre to cross over. And they're like, oh wow, like, you know, it's not in the game, but like, okay, this is what a bad end looks like. I wish this bad end was in the game, I've even seen from some people. Like, they like that part of the storytelling. They like it when it goes bad. It's like it's an interesting outcome.
Sure.
And they expected it. There are other people who have seen that content and said, whoa, I hope that's not in the game because there's no content warning on this game. I have no idea that anything like that would be in this game. I don't care that it's a genre convention. I'm new to the genre. And to me, like, I think that's a complex issue, and I have my own thoughts on like where I would fit in there, especially because it's not in the game as far as anybody knows. It's not something you could find. That someone just had to dig around to find it. But I think it's an interesting moment in which a niche genre is crossing over to a wider spectrum, and suddenly the conventions that traditionally wouldn't get content warnings, you wouldn't call them out, you wouldn't say, oh, by the way, there could be like death and murder in this cute right. dating game, because yeah. of course there is, because that's how all these work. Suddenly there's this moment like, oh, wait, should we have shifted what we say heads up about in this game, which is mm-hmm. it's a more of a thought experiment for me, given that I don't think that content is in the game. But I think it's an interesting dilemma as anyone who makes anything in the world.
Yeah,
there was I ran into this when I sort of like went down a visual novel hole when I was at Giant Bomb, because a lot of people had like they'd wanted someone at the site to play games like 999, and they said, sure, like I'll give it a shot, like I'll yeah. see how this goes. And I remember writing up about Danganronpa and 999 and VLR, and when I was covering those games, like I would give them proper reviews, and like one of the things I would mention that was consistent in a lot of those reviews was like, these games are really good, but like the fan service stuff is shitty, and like right. it really bugs me, and like completely takes away from the game, and is going to turn off people that would otherwise be super in to what's happening here. But like the gross fan service-y like exploitation of women is just like fuck. Like, and I know the history of these genres, and part of the business rationale for even making some of these games is the inclusion of stuff like this. But like, I think for some people that are like in a genre, like are like you. And I know this is someone that enjoys horror, right? Like, uh-huh. there are certain things that I just let slide, or not let slide, I just acknowledge that are implicit and are problems with the genre that I just have to get over and get by in order to enjoy the parts of it that I do enjoy. And so it's interesting when then you come to a subgenre that you're not familiar with, and right. then that stuff gets exposed in a different way, in a different light, that, like, the community, the fandom, doesn't look at the same way that an outsider might look at mm-hmm. it.
Totally, super interesting, and I want you to keep reporting back on Dream Daddy. I might try to. How long is it? Do people know? I mean, I guess it's a bunch of routes, right? So, yeah. Like, how long is one route? I can finish one route of Dream Daddy. I might not go back and see all the routes. I might not get all the endings. I'm not going to do the whole VLR thing where I get all the deaths, of course. I don't think there are any deaths.
I really want to play this.
You should.
And I really want to, I want to know where I would fall on that as well. As just, I don't know. I haven't played many visual novels.
Okay.
So I would be very new to the genre, but it's very really interested in this particular case.
It's really approachable and accessible. Yeah. Like, again, like, I'm, you know... I played visual novels mostly for like the weird ass stories. I've never really played ones that are specifically focused on sort of like romance and dating and stuff like that. And this one is I don't know how it'll play out for the rest of the route or routes that I end up doing, but I was howling with laughter at some of the writing in this game. Like, it is worth it for the writing. Like, it is just exceptionally well written.
It's a genre right that's really great because it can highlight incredible writing and it can do stuff cheaply that would cost a big 3D action game a fortune to do.
Sure. Yeah.
It's a genre that I wish was a little... I'm hoping that this opens the door for more visual novels. Certainly we've seen more and more in the last few years in the West. It's very accessible genre in comparison to things where like, oh, I have to do very complex controls and stuff.
Anybody with computer literacy basically could play it.
Right, okay. Totally. Yeah. And like, I appreciate that comparatively, and I want those to keep growing and to be more experimental. Like, I actually really love a lot of the games that are made by a studio whose name I'm forgetting the name of. They made Magical Diary. They made a game called Black Closet. I bring this up because I just searched for the name Black Closet,
It
just showed me images of a black closet.
There you go.
Hanako Games has made a bunch of really good, very interesting visual novels and kind of adventure games that blend traditional visual novel storytelling with like kind of experimental, almost like board game mechanics or like resource spending, like strategy, kind of like a social strategy games, right?
Yeah.
I think the one that you may have played on the stream, Patrick, was Long Live the Queen, which is fantastic.
Oh, that game.
That game is...
Oh.
I love Long Live the Queen.
I remember that game.
Magical Diary is really cool, too. But Black Closet is, like, secretly one of my favorite games in the last few years. One of the ones that I wish I could spend more time with. Because you're, like, basically playing a team of, like, secret... like inspectors at an all-girls school where there's like conspiracies and like secret, you know, cults and it's a lot of like, all right, do you send the tough girl to go like rough up the person who's maybe in the cult to get information, or do you send the person who's like a social butterfly to work her connections? It's actually like a really interesting tactics game that then also is blended as a visual novel. It's really cool.
I'm super into this.
I just think that like it's a good space for experimentation in games, and so I want people to keep doing it.
And there is, just in case, this is just a thing I know in the world, mm-hmm. there is an engine called Renpy for making visual novels that's super accessible. So if you want to make a thing...
I think because it's Python. It's RenPy, right?
RenPy. Sorry. So. RenPy.
I think so.
Like Senpai. See,
like
I did
Senpai.
It.
RenPy
I made a
like
thing.
Senpai.
I did a thing mm-hmm. that had to do
I that. Also want to point out that another very charming part about Dream Daddy is that during the loading screens and the menus, there are dad tips at the bottom of the screen. I'm going to read some of them.
Oh, God.
Dad tip number 45. Do what you love and the money will come.
Is that true?
Dad tip 57. If life gives you lemons, parsley, onion, and eggs, make a really nice omelet.
Oh, my God.
That would be a good omelet.
Dad tip 72.
I'd get an omelet.
The only acceptable time and place for decaf coffee is never and in the trash. Dads.
Dads
have good tips.
Dads
for life.
I'm trying to find a question from the question bucket. If you have a question, you can send it to gamingadvice.com. Use the subject question or questions or question bucket or just a bunch of questions. No, use one of those.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it'll go in the wrong.
Just one of those.
So just use question or questions, please. That would be great. Let's see. Here is actually a question that came in. Let's go. There was one in here that I'm looking for. That's right. It's close.
Use a daddy tip.
This was for Rob, and it's also technically for me.
All right.
We've talked about daddies. We've talked about fantasy sports. There's one more thing we need to talk about for this to be a complete episode. We've talked about the future of media. I want to just read this. Hey, Waypointers. This question will align more directly to Rob's interests, but I'm curious to hear everyone's opinion as well. I'm currently caught up in a semi-annual cycle of joy/despair that is my interest in the BattleTech tabletop system, with all the tables, charts, and number crunching that make it tick. Rob has leaned forward all the way in his chair.
Oh, he's doing a hand thing, too.
I have a complicated relationship with games like this. The mechanics are genuinely exciting in their scope. What could be more thrilling than loading up your handcrafted, battle-hardened mercenaries onto the battlecruisers and dropships to invade an isolated moon base of a rival clan?
Is this Dream Daddy?
This is my Dream Daddy. What stories might unfold as your fire lance of mechs hunt enemy infantry lurking in the ruined buildings of a nearby city? The possibilities are endlessly fascinating, but utterly paralyzing. It's an age-old problem of granularity versus usability. The level of simulation might be enticing, but is the game worth investing time in if I can barely grok all the rules it takes to run it, much less teach it to a friend? Scenarios might sound exciting until you've spent half an evening nose-deep in rules trying to figure out whether or not your orbital bombardment makes it through the atmosphere, much less whether or not it hits the intended target. I've considered utilizing what meager scripting skills I have to write a program to do the majority of the math, including combat, company generation, and finance management, so as to streamline play, but with an actual licensed BattleTech video game on the horizon, I wonder if it's a waste of time. What do you think? Is it worth investing in this system that I might never get to enjoy with anyone else? I think Rob just did a whole body shit no
answer.
Shake.
He did the answer.
Thanks, and keep up the great work. Best, Michael G.
All right. Times change. And we must change with them.
I see.
We have more choices now than we used to. We're busier than we used to be. Mm-hmm. And BattleTech of old. So for those of you who like only know BattleTech through like the MechWarrior games and such, BattleTech began life as a very traditional 1970s style hexagonal grid war game that happened to be about like giant battling robots.
Yeah.
From that,
my longest they start saying, like, ever.
You can customize those robots. So, like, we give you some pre-made robot types, but, like, hey, maybe you want to customize them and, like, try your own configurations. So the rules support that. And then the rules start getting increasingly out there. There's another board game out there that almost nobody that I've ever encountered has ever played called Aerotech, where it's like the BattleTech universe also has, like, really powerful aircraft.
Oh,
and
they have their own battles. Not E-R-O. Yeah. That's a different game.
Yeah, I had the same
very different.
Like,
Dream Mechie.
Yeah. So Aerotech has its own rules.
Right.
But then there were ways to make those two systems play together. So now there's like, now the battlefield can support air units, and air units interacting with ground units, even though they interact on two different levels. Then there was the MechWarrior RPG, in which you got to, like, live a life inside the MechWarrior BattleTech universe. And that, like, had an entire rule set for just being a MechWarrior, a smuggler, you know, all that sci-fi goodness.
That sounds good.
Yeah. And so, like, back in the day, a thing that a lot of BattleTech MechWarrior fans would do is they would have a MechWarrior RPG campaign going on. Then, for the battle sequences, for the encounters, imagine D&D, but you get a new encounter, and you just shit can the RPG, and you bust out your ginormous 1980s like board war game to go resolve that encounter, which in itself is going to be like a 6-hour commitment if you're like bringing in all this shit. And the thing is, I want to be that person.
Yeah, of course.
I still want to be that person. Like,
Austin. Okay, here's the thing. The problem is that being that person suggests a lot of other things about your life, like the availability of time and resources and focus and friends who also have
friends
all
who
of
are
those
in
things.
That. Yes,
yes, exactly.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Like, you know, I would love a reality where, you know, me, Austin, Ian, occasionally whoever we can force to play the shit with us. Is like we're getting together for these like day long sessions of like just living this shit. But that's not your life. And also it's a really cumbersome system that's going to like comprehending, it's gonna be a pain in the ass. It wasn't really designed holistically to fit together this way, and they never really did like
Jerry rigged it together.
Yes, they never did solve those problems. So in order to basically get the fantasy that MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries, the PC game, or the MechWarrior Tactics game for the PC, like, kind of evoked, you had to have this, like, Rube Goldberg, like, nesting doll of systems that you had to completely master and right. then maintain. You know what? Fuck that. And Jordan Wiseman, like, you know, he kind of disavows this stuff too. Like,
who is the mech father? The mech daddy.
He is the mech daddy, the all father.
Heard of the mech daddy? The mech daddy.
So he created. Mech Warrior and BattleTech. You know, he created Shadowrun. But the thing he says today is, like, this stuff was good for its time.
Right.
It's not how I would design it now. It's not. These are not modern designs. And they really aren't. And I've gone back and I've tried to play BattleTech and MechWarrior. I don't enjoy doing it as much. I enjoy having it on the shelf. I enjoy thinking of myself as the kind of person who would, like, play that and be literate in those roles. And I still kind of am. But I'm looking forward to this BattleTech game coming out on PC.
Me too.
That's just going to handle this shit.
Can I just say that we need a BattleTech, like, Game of Thrones? I'm just going to read. This is the write-up from A Time of War, the BattleTech RPG.
It is the
31st century. Mankind has spread to the stars and spawned titanic stellar empires, each controlling hundreds of worlds across 1,000 light years and beyond.
Oh, my God.
Yet the sins of man have followed him from the cradle of humanity. Political machinations of feudal lords plunge whole sectors into war. Unscrupulous merchant starship captains smuggle weapons to their own faction's enemies. Greedy military commanders demand tribute from worlds they're protecting. Animalistic pirate kings harvest high technologies and human slaves in lightning raids. Betrayals from oath-bound allies leave honorable soldiers growing cold on forgotten worlds.
Brr.
Death at the tip of a knife from a concubine turned assassin to avenge a world and a love lost. It is a time of war.
Oh my God.
I want to watch that show!
That sounds great!
Also, there's mechs there!
I have Game of Thrones with robots.
I have a bookshelf full of the BattleTech novels, of which there are many. Admittedly, like 80% of them were written by Michael Stackpole, who connoisseurs of the X-Wing novels may also remember. Mm-hmm. Who I like. He was good at his job. I don't think his stories. I think his stories sort of fit a template.
Right.
And once you identify what that template is, it gets a little stale. But I used to be really invested in the saga of the Davian family and their rivalry with the treacherous Lao.
The fucking Lao. How do you feel about House Steiner? How do you, like, we could go, but we're not, let's not.
Okay.
I have a real question.
Yes.
I have a legitimate real question.
Is it about the clans? No.
No.
It's fine.
So in a fantasy universe where retirement is a thing that happens for our generation, which I know, there's like a 3% chance of that happening.
Right.
In that universe, would this be your ideal? Like,
no.
Say you have a
and
few
that's
years.
The actual secret is because I still want this to be more streamlined. Because I'm not interested in losing 8 hours to a single game session at this point. Even if I had more time.
If you were a retiree. Just,
the things I like about this stuff is this thing that I just did, right? Which is like reading the rad fiction side of it and like digging into like the political machinations and the like all that stuff is stuff that I love. And I do love giant robots fighting.
Sure, sure.
But I don't 8 hours, 6 hours in one day love giant robots fighting for one fight. I don't.
I understand.
I don't know. Rob might be different though.
No. Okay. No, it's too much effort for, like, when you boil it down, it's also not really that complicated or interesting. Like, it's, you know, like, learning to navigate that system is really the skill you develop, mm-hmm. but then once you've learned to navigate that system and, like, sort of guess at how the combat resolution tables are going to be affected by this move versus that, once you've internalized all that, a lot of the interesting decisions kind of also go away. So then you've gotten to, there's a series of really optimal choices, but just managing the system to get there is fussy, and that's where the real skill is.
Yeah. I will say I probably would get into 40K if I had infinite time and money, because I like the process of building those models a lot, and so that would actually scratch an itch and, like, fill time.
You know, You know what I really want to get into is the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game.
Uh-huh.
You ever play that?
I've not in the last 5 years. Not since before I went to grad school.
It's a good example of a system designed to encourage hilariously overdone misfortune and randomness in a way that feels very Warhammer.
Yeah, okay.
So a lot of systems are designed to create, like, sort of predictable and sensible outcomes within a system. Warhammer's like, yeah, what if we did that?
And then also...
And then also, all this crazy shit would happen as well.
Yeah,
And
the winds of magic are, like, the fucking best encapsulation of, like, it's luck, man. The magic in the Warhammer fantasy world is just like, oh, the wind blew weird. Like, I guess all of our wizards can't do shit anymore. Thanks. I love it. It's like a it is, like, kind of great abstraction of the notion that, no, there is no amount of, you know, military brilliance that can outdo bad luck. I think
House Steiner can go to hell.
All right, good. I'm glad we're on record with House Steiner. That's gonna do for us this Monday morning afternoon.
Yeah, at 4:20. Well, almost.
Well, you just missed it. It's 4:21 now.
I just missed it.
You just missed 4:21. One better than 4:20.
I was gonna play Dota, but now.
Yeah. What would have been better? Would have been better.
Shout out to Waka. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle Riendo?
Danielle R I.
Patrick Klepek.
I mean, at Patrick Klepek.
Robert Zachney.
On New Avalon, serving my masters, House Davion.
God. At Rob Zachney on Twitter. You can find Tim Barnes at TimBarnes451. You can find Natalie Watson, our live producer, at Natalie Watson on Twitter. I believe that's correct.
I thought it was Daddly Watson.
Sorry, it's Daddly Watson. You have to change that. Let Twitter know. You'll get the verification mark.
Make sure you get that right.
Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use his track, Miss You, off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN and find everything we do. Waypoint.vice.com. Come out. Come on out this weekend, guys.
Come on out.
And, the barbecue and rock out. Whatever event it sounds like.
Barbecue and rock out sounds great.
It's pretty great. Come out to waypoint.vice.com where you can read about Gitmo now.
Gitmo and daddies. Here. You know, we got it all.
We got it all.
We've got everything under
seriously,
the sun.
I would appreciate it if you swung by the site and took a look at some the stuff that we're doing for this week around prisons and prison culture and games and how all that interacts. Until tomorrow, where hopefully we'll get a chicken dinner yet again. We'll try. I think that's going to do it for us.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing one thing. But maybe not. I think I did everything so smoothly.
You did it beautifully.
The outro is just...
No, you did a beautiful job.
I think I just... Oh, there is one thing I'm missing.
Yeah.
What is it that we say to them, Danielle?
We say, be good. Or be good at it. Peace. Daddy.
Oh, God.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.